The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, your host for the House of Hardcore podcast, Tommy Dreamer!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the House of Hardcore podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Dreamer, and this week I have my friend for many, many years, somebody that I've been wanting to get on and somebody that I think perhaps is one of the greatest referees that one has ever counted my shoulders to the mat, and that's a lot of referees. Brian Hebner, welcome to the show. How are you, buddy?
Hello, Tommy. I'm doing well, man. Very happy to be on your show. It didn't look good at first, but we got it straight because your team, as you said.
Yeah, you got a team too. I got a team. I love it. The fact that as you know, I'm not the best tech guy and you're not the best tech guy. And I'm waiting for him and he's waiting for me. And yet both of us are just sitting waiting for each other like two idiots.
Well, we made it work. We're good.
All righty. Well, the question I ask everybody, first off the bat, what got you hooked in this wonderful world of pro wrestling?
No, mine's pretty obvious. I grew up around it all my life as a child. For those of you living under a rock, my dad is Earl Hebner, legendary referee. And so it was kind of really didn't have a choice. It was just something I always loved and really took it in as early as I can remember and just absolutely loved it and was just mesmerized by it and always wanted to be in it.
Different for you as it is being second generation in this business. How was that growing up? Because you know, like, this is your dad, but like, you're also a fan or like wrestlers coming to the house, you know, like, I don't know what my daughters know what that's like, but like when my daughter is like Goldust, Edge, Swoggle, like all these people are staying at the house and my kids will just be like, oh, Dylan, oh, Adam, you know, like they never got that. I don't even think they got that I'm famous, but like, how was that growing up for you?
It was awesome, man. I was honestly, when I knew I was going to be on your podcast, I did some reminiscing because I figured we'd go to this portion of it.
Of course.
So growing up as a kid, it was actually kind of tough for me. Because my dad didn't go to a lot of my things, you know what I mean? And I remember him going to one baseball game that I completely just was the drizzling shits for some reason that day. And he came to one basketball game of mine that I actually put up 40 points and was actually phenomenal. And he never knew that I was such a good basketball player or baseball player, but I didn't prove I was a good baseball player that day to him. But that portion of my life sucked. And I will say that because, you know, having your father's, you know, watching you do what you do is awesome. But I kind of got that back once I got into the business, you know what I mean? Cause he was watching me, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But there was a lot more good stuff too than the bad, but those are the things that I remember that just really sucked, that it was not there for birthdays, wasn't there for Christmas, and wasn't there for, you know, all the important events in your life. And I knew it wasn't his fault. I just knew it was putting bread on the table. But it took me a long time to understand that. But otherwise, as far as your other question goes, it was kind of cool to see Black Bart come into my house. It was kind of cool to see superstar Billy Graham have breakfast in the morning. I didn't know when I woke up and he's at the table. The Steiner brothers showing up. I mean, yeah, it was really cool. But, you know, the thing is, I guess I was kind of like your kids. I didn't really know, I guess, exactly who they were until I got to another portion of my life. And I was like, holy shit. The Steiner brothers were just in the house like 4 years ago. Are you kidding me? And they were like world champions and stuff like that. So I think it's just the age where you just don't really realize how important and a big deal these people are. But it is awesome, though.
You know, a big part of I'll never forget this, dude. I went on an overseas tour. And when I came home, like, my kids looked different to me. They were young, and I was gone for like 17 days. And I was just like, whoa. It was another one of those weighing issues why I left the WWE. One of the cool things that Beulah has ever said to me was just like, when you were home, you were 100% home and there. And yep. Yes, it was very, very hard and hard on, you know, my family, my kids. But like we could get into a whole other topic about your mom and how much you appreciate the hard work that was put in on that side. You know,
yes.
When you're out there doing it, you don't appreciate it. But then when you could step back from your life and be like, oh man, maybe I could have been more caring. I could have been more attentive and not worry about that. But that's a whole other podcast. That's a deep, deep dive. I guess from being a fan, did you have a favorite?
I did, man. I was a huge, huge, huge fan. Don't know why. Of two people. It was Tully Blanchard and Nikita Koloff. I absolutely loved them. And I was a big mark for Wahoo McDaniel as well. So those are my favorites.
Well, that's you're a Carolina kid. So you're a big, and this is when your dad worked in, you know, I NWA. Guess. Like, yeah. NWA territory. Dude, it's so funny. I mean, I honestly don't know how old you are, but like I look at you and you're still minus. You know, I mean, when I first met you, had the goofy or blonder hair.
Hey, it went goofy.
But you still look so, so young. How old are you?
I am 48.
Oh, wow. We are so close in age and I never knew that. I look like shit. Yeah, so we grew up around the same age. So, I mean, man, you got to see. Did you go to a lot of shows when they were local?
Oh, all the time. I literally, I've told this story before. It's not long, but my dad used to have this school bus. And he bought this school bus and he painted it blue. And he put these big hooks on the side of it to where he could put the steel cage on the side of each side of the bus. And he gutted it out with all the seats. And then that's where he put the ring. And then he built a wall with a like fiberglass window so you can look to the back of the bus, and it made a U shape where seats were to the left of you, then they were in the back of that little wall, and then to the right of the bus, so like a little U there where everybody could sit and kind of lay down and whatnot. And I had a 5 gallon bucket that I would sit on because all the guys on the ring crew were fat, and so they took up all the room on the seats, so I had nowhere to sit when I was with them. So I sat on a 5 gallon bucket and I went all over the place, man, helping set up rings and all that kind of stuff. It was really, really cool. We had a kerosene heater in there that would heat us up in the wintertime. It was really, it was for kind of broke people, really. But I thought it was awesome. And but that's how my dad made his money, man. It was, you know, driving that ring around and refereeing at night after he put it up. It was pretty cool when I would help tear down and all that kind of thing, and got to really get to experience the paying your dues portion of his career.
Wow, that's awesome, dude. Forget about, you know how much I love your dad, and I cared a lot about your uncle. Like, I mean, that's a whole other conversation too, but I love your dad and blessed to call him my friend. And again, somebody that I just met from WWE, yourself included, and just like we all bonded together, which is cool. But I can't believe, dude, like I love this. I love when we do shows like this. Like when I did your show, I found out some stuff, but like I never knew how old you are. And I thought we were about 20 years apart.
No, we're not. Unfortunately, we're not.
No wonder why we got along so good. We're the same age. We saw the same stuff.
Yeah, we're old as fuck, Tommy.
So you weren't in school for this. All right, I don't want to jump ahead. When did you decide you want to be a referee?
Well, I wanted to be a wrestler. In my delusional mind, I thought that my little skinny ass was going to be able to get in the ring and do what you guys do. And that's what I wanted to do. And it wasn't long after I got in the ring and actually started messing around with, actually it was Black Bart. I don't know the people that know who Black Bart is, but I started messing around with him and I was like, man, this shit hurts. And then I quickly said, maybe I should do what my dad does. Maybe daddy's a smarter guy than me. And that's when it kind of altered and kind of flipped. My dad never talked me out of it, but he didn't really talk me in it either. As far as being a wrestler, he just made it seem like it was kind of a silly idea, but he didn't say don't do it.
Well, I mean, any great referee has to learn how to take bumps and should train like a pro wrestler. I know this, just because you've told me this, but also I've also seen it. You talk about paying your dues, but you also, you know, your dad was known as a great referee, and sometimes that greatness, they want that for their children. Your dad was hard on you to get into this. If you can share that. And at times, like, I mean, I know, you know, we've had a lot of discussions about it. I've seen you guys argue about it, but if you could just tell the listeners about, like, okay, dad, I want to do this seriously. And like what he made you do. And I also, I mean, now in hindsight, he did it because number one, he loved you, but two, it made you great.
No, you're right. I didn't know it at the time, but my dad was very, 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 very harsh on me. That's probably an understatement. And I couldn't quite understand why, because I was his son. So it was like, you know, I'm trying to do what you do. But when I started to really become serious about it, we would just talk and just figure out what it meant and what was entailed in actually being a good referee, a solid referee. Then we began to go through the motions, and then we began to go through footwork, and then we began to figure out the ring spacing, and then we began to figure out bumping. Of course, he didn't do that portion with me. There was others that did that with me. But finally, when I started to get the gist of it, or I thought I got the gist of it, worked many, many house shows, many, many live events, many indies, and finally got that break and was able to come to WWE. And when I got there, my dad, who was in charge of all the referees and making the assignments, he never put me on anything except for Explosion, Heat, Sunday Night Heat, Jacked, all these different shows they had that were not their big programs, obviously, like your Monday Night Raws or your SmackDowns. So one day I thought I did a great job. I was already on Velocity and Sunday Night Heat for like a year and a half. And I was just like, all right, I'm tired of this shit, man. I want to go to the main roster and fucking be one of the, you know, the main guys. So I wanted him to really look at this next match, because I thought I had everything in my mind down, and I felt like I did a great job. And I came back to him and I was like, so I'm all out of breath. So what'd you think? Something wrong with your fucking legs? And I said, what are you talking about? There's something wrong with your fucking legs. And I'm like, no, there's nothing wrong with my legs, Dad. Why? Well, keep your hand off the fucking rope. That's what old referees do that can't get up on their own. Let me do that. You need to hop up on your ass and just get up. And don't use the rope anymore. You're still not ready. And I'm like, geez, man. Everything. Well, what about everything else? Everything else was fine, but that one thing right there will make you or break you. And I'm like, okay, wow. All right. So needless to say, if you go back and watch any of my body of work, you'll notice I've never touched that rope. And that's something that I always have taught Daniel and Daniel Spencer, for you, those of you who don't know who I'm talking about, who often used it as well when I got to Impact, and other referees. And I've taught them at that as well, because actually it is a very important rule, because it's lazy. You know, you generally, when you're a referee, you're usually in your 20s and 30s, if not less. I mean, but so you need to get up, you know, you just need to get up. It's just professional looking, and it's just the way it's supposed to be done. So anyway, that's just a small example of his hardness on me, but I guess it was for a reason. And I, in my opinion, that's why I believe I'm one of the better refs that have done it. So.
Agreed. I also write that in there, ladies and gentlemen, is why me and Brian hit it off. Cause how many matches on Heat did I have?
I was with you all the time, but we still are.
Modern referee has changed a lot, blah, blah, blah. But for you, we'll talk about first your WWE experience. You're traveling the world. You're becoming great. Your greatest accomplishment. Bubba always sings your praises. Bubba knows I think Bubba should be your hype man, as well as do your introduction, because he literally knows all your accomplishments. And I also love when we bring you on Busted Open, he, you know, states your accomplishments, or makes you state your accomplishments.
Yes, he does.
And he'll be like, how many WrestleManias you do? So put yourself over for a second. How many WrestleManias did you do?
I asked Bully. I think 4 or 5, something like that.
How many WrestleMania main events?
2.
Vince McMahon had a famous match. Who did he ask to be his personal ref?
Brian Hebner. It was him versus Hulk Hogan, Seattle, Washington.
That's one hell of an accomplishment right there. And like I said, in hindsight, when you think about it, that's your dad pressuring you to get you to that spot in one of the big where the listen, it's different when you're doing the main, when the boss says, I want you there. That's quite the accomplishment. Do you have a favorite memory moment from WWE?
Obviously, Vince versus Hogan was my biggest moment as far as just the biggest. No one's ever done it. No one ever will. But my biggest match that I think I ever did there that I'm just really happy and thrilled with, there's two, and they both involve Kurt Angle, actually. Kurt Angle and Shawn, WrestleMania, don't know the number. I'm not good at that. And don't even know the location. But that was a great match at WrestleMania, the best on the card that night, in my opinion. And Shawn wasn't so sure about me being his referee that night because he was on Raw. I was on SmackDown, and Kyoto was his referee. And so Kurt Angle really had to sell the fact that I was going to be fine to him. And then if there was all said and done, he was like, you're going to have a hell of a future in this business, kid. So it was pretty cool coming from Shawn. And then my second one was the hair versus hair match between Kurt Angle and Edge in a cage.
Nice. Maybe Shawn didn't trust a Hebner brother. Think about it.
I wouldn't either if I was him.
I wanted to just quickly go about that because me and your dad have talked about that. Your dad has talked about it when he doesn't want to. How was that for you? You're at this time 20 something.
Yeah.
Early 20s. Montreal screw job is what we're talking about.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what year that was.
I want to say 96. Oh, wow.
I don't know. It was pretty wild, man. It was pretty wild, but I will admit.
Are you in the business?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
It was pretty wild, but I will have to admit it was not the wildest event that happened in my dad's career. That was really crazy, but that was the Hogan deal because I was in school and
97.
Okay.
Oh, the Saturday night's main event.
Yes. That was worse. That was really worse because really? Kids at school.
Please tell me about it.
Well, think about it. Hulk Hogan was a world known hero. I mean, say your vitamins your vitamins, say your prayers, all that kind of stuff. I mean, just an icon. And I was not privy to this information. My dad could not let this out. Only thing he told me was to watch it. And I'm like, why would he want me to watch Uncle Dave's show? I don't understand this. And so I tune into it. And obviously I watch it unfold right before me. And I'm like, what the hell? So I go back to school the next day and catch some shit. I'm talking some shit. People call my dad's names and shit. I mean, it was crazy. I was like, I couldn't say anything. I was like, yeah, he is an asshole. He's a dick. I didn't know nothing about this, guys. It was crazy. My dad called me afterwards and I was actually kind of like a little bit in tears because it was kind of crazy.
This is also a different generation. This is, I mean, number one, you're young. It's also a generation of kayfabe where not everything's out there and all this stuff. And I mean, I remember I'm 4 years older than you. That was a shocking moment one of the most watched, that was the most watched televised event on Saturday night's main event. I think it was like the most watched thing on television.
Do you know to this day, a stat fact, that Vince McMahon and others did not know that David had a twin brother? And they were searching around to find someone that looked like Dave, my Uncle Dave. And it was finally pitched that, hey, guys, he has a twin brother. He's with Crockett. And they did not know that. And that's how my dad got the deal. He had to walk away from the Murnix back then, and the Crockett's. They were merging or some deal. I don't know the history there. I'm not going to pretend to know it. But anyway, long story short, he had to submit his, 2 week notice, if you will, to the Crocketts and the Murnicks and let them know that he was going to head up north. They flew my dad in, met him. They went over in Connecticut for 2 or 3 weeks, and you know, in the headquarters, I guess we call it. But anyway, it was just ironic that no one knew that he had a twin brother. Crazy.
I'd like to give a shout out to our sponsors of the House of Hardcore podcast. And you know, guys, it's something, the little secret that some of us, not me, of course, have experienced. And that's sometimes, you know, when you're in the bedroom, you can't just go the way you want to go. But guess what? Now you can with Mango. They help men get hard and go hard. That's right. It's a new innovative compound that will level up your bedroom game. You know, I'm an innovator. They are rapidly dissolving tablets and they hit your bloodstream quick for faster results. And at that time, guess what? We need those fast results, but we don't want to go too fast. And it comes in delicious mango flavor. But Mango is the real deal. It's individually packaged for on the go when you need it. You just put it in your pocket, you put it in your wallet, you keep it in your car, whatever you got to do when the time is right. It's 100% online. It's a free doctor's visit, and it's also discreet. No subscription required. So try Mangoes. So I got to tell you, go to MangoRx. That's MangoRx.com and use the promo code GAS15. And our listeners will receive 15% off your first order. That's right. That's the promo code GAS15 for 15% of your first order. I'm so excited. I'm stumbling on my own words. Or maybe I'm just really overloaded on mango. I like it. I'm happy. I'm excited. I'm excited for this ad read. So finally, go to mangorx.com and start your intimate lovemaking today.
How about I'm this days old when I just found out that I never knew that was his first day?
That was it. Yes. Yeah.
What a hell of a debut. I'm texting your dad right after this. Wow. Holy crap, dude. Well, that would be traumatizing. Were you also a Hulk Hogan fan?
Yeah, not really. Not really. I became one, but I wasn't really. I never watched WWE. I never watched WWF. I was a Crockett fan, man. I was an NWA fan. I watched my Saturday 605s. That was me. Magnum TAs, Nikita Koloffs, you know what I mean? Ric Flairs, Dusty Rhodes, Roddy Piper. Those were my man. I mean, those were my guys.
Did you get... You weren't really smart into the business yet, but then I'm thinking they literally said that Ted DiBiase created your father in a lab or someone had plastic surgery to look like. So right then and there, you're like, wait a minute.
Right. No, you're right. That actually was stated and said.
Dude, this is awesome. See, now we're straight up fan talking how it should be. Dude, that's great. I love that. Okay, so you leave WWE, now you go to Impact Wrestling. Impact Wrestling, you and I really, really got extra cool there. You, just like myself, were there through a whole bunch of different managements. With Impact Wrestling, you were, and it was different. Like in WWE, a lot of people walked on eggshells, especially referees. And it got even worse after you left because, you know, it became this like almost directive that wrestling is now real and you guys have to act like it's real on like, you know, letting people go on 10 counts and all that stuff. Impact, I think, was a lot less one, walking on eggshells, two, lenient on the rules, if we should say. We'll go talk about other stuff like that, but do you have a favorite Impact moment?
Well, it's so funny you brought that up because on my podcast, which is called Reffing It Up with Brian Epp.
Real plug your shit at the end, bro.
No, it's because
putting yourself over.
I had Mr. Anderson on this week, and right. We both feel that I mentioned it to him, and he agreed that that was the best portion of my career, in my opinion, the happiest I've ever been. The port of the rejuvenating of Brian Hebner. And it was because of the locker room, and it was because of the atmosphere, and it was just because we were able to be us. It was that you could be Brian. You didn't have to be the Vince Brian. You didn't have to be the Johnny Ace Brian. You could be Brian. And I think that's why, like, me and you and me and Anderson became such good friends, because we weren't all walking on eggshells. We were able to be ourselves.
I think another part, and this is like, the referees kind of hung with the referees in WWE, and yeah, all the boys would hang out together, but there was a bit of a split with everybody. Like, yeah, like, hey, we'll all meet out there, but like the refs hung with the refs, the wrestlers hung with the wrestlers, the agents hung with the agents, you know, yeah, we'd go out to eat, but like there was a divide. And I think it was done purposely, not by like the boys. It's like, oh yeah, we're going here, here, and here. But I just think it was done. It's weird. Because I've never experienced that in any other place.
No, me either. And I haven't either in any other company I work for. I'll just say that at Impact, you're dead right. There was no divide. I think that the setup was also unique, where people bitched and complained about it. And I loved it. I love simple shit. We were all in a trailer. We had three trailers. We all dressed together.
I was just going to say, I don't even know where the referees used to dress at times. Sometimes they would dress in our locker room, not really at TVs.
No, we were always in the TV production room. That's where we always went.
Like I said, by design.
Wow. Yeah, we were. Yeah. And I think that the setup that TNA had was the reason why it was just so fun for me. I mean, I went out with all you guys. We all went out together. It was never a divide. Yeah, it was never a divide. Never.
The ale house, whatever was low. If we were on the road, hey, this is where we're all going. All right, see you there.
Yep. I mean, and when we were doing house shows, we had lobby parties where everyone was invited. Whether you came or not was up to you, but it was there. The invite was there. It was never singled out like, don't tell Tommy, but we're going to have a lobby party at this hotel. No, everybody knew. We would even sometimes print the paper out and hand it out and say, here's the freaking address. You know, so it was just a great time in my life. A great time. I mean, I wish I could rewind that portion of my career. And most people would say, why don't you go back to WWE? I'll be honest with you, because I don't want to fucking go back there. It wasn't the best time of my life. It wasn't.
Well, I mean, you've made it outside of wrestling. And like, you know, you've also seen the other side. You've had the highs of highs and the lows of lows, and you're still here. And you know, you're doing good in your life outside of wrestling, as much as you miss it. And like, I joke when you left Impact, you were just like, man, you know, I was like, I thought you were retiring. And you're like, well, no, they wanted me to be there. And I don't remember whose match he asked me to be there. And you know, and I know you would do that. Like, I'm never going to retire. But like, if Bubba wanted to retire, Bubba would be like, hey, I want, and you'd be out there in a second. And I know you also get your ass in. I mean, you're always in good shape, but like you'd get your ass in ref shape real quick, even just if it was for one night.
Absolutely. I would.
That's how much love and passion, you know, like I always say this, hey, I was promoted as the heart and soul of ECW, the heart and soul of professional wrestling. Everybody has that. But like for you, you take this very, very serious. You're one of the few referees that would stand by almost to an annoyance factor of listening to the guys' matches, because you wanted to be right place, right time, and have all the information. Even if you had 3-4 matches, you wanted to be there so you didn't mess it up. Or
that's absolutely true.
Another thing you did, and it's funny, Scott D'Amore just brought it up a couple of weeks ago. He would say, hey, man, like, and he said it to everybody I was addressing the referees about something. He goes, Brian Hebner, he goes, would come to me and straight up say, hey, man, I'm in a position here. Can you help me out? They're going over this stuff. They're not really caring about me. How do I get out of this? Blah, blah, blah. I don't want to step on any toes. How do I do this? And that's cool. Let's go to our agent. And he was just like, Brian at least had the guts as well as like the smartness to say, hey, and I tell every referee, including myself, I will throw you under the bus in my match. I don't care about you. And it's wrong because I should, but the referee needs to care about the referee too. And like, when I always say, hey, WWE, if you did that, guess what? You do it once, cool. You'll get reprimanded. You do it twice, you're fired. They will replace you. Impact's a little different. But you can't do this. We have to have this uniform rules. Why? Because, like, cool, but we can stretch it. Like, for example, Sheamus's chest on the ropes. Technically, you're supposed to break it on the five, but the people count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 when he does the forearms as he's hanging the guy over the ropes. The wrestlers and the referees are working together. The referee literally is like, eh, I'm getting caught up in this deal because Sheamus is over. If Sheamus was an enhancement talent or Sheamus was a mid-card guy, guess what, Sheamus? He's getting disqualified.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You're, as you know, every company's different. Your thoughts. All right. Well, let me ask you two things. Because you, and for everybody listening, man, the referee is one of the most crucial parts of this. That's why I always be blessed when I'd work with Brian. They're a communicator. They're also helping us with time. I remember Scott Armstrong would tell me to breathe and I'd be like, shut up, I'm breathing, right? Calm down. You're doing great on time. Hey guys, you got to hurry up, you know, blah, 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 blah. But there's three people out there when you're in a match and referees don't get enough credit to their, like, it's your job not to get the credit. I remember what you told me your dad said, hey, you got to work here. I don't want you in camera shots. Why? Because nobody's paid to see a referee.
Right. Right.
And that's straight up. I was there when your father said it and I was like, oh, that's pretty, he's right.
Yeah.
Modern refereeing. If someone wanted to get into the business and said, because I mean, everyone thinks they could be a referee until they do it. I remember me when I was first started training, my trainer, Johnny Rods, WWE Hall of Famer. Okay, cool. Be a referee. And the wrestlers are purposely like, I'm out of position. I'm getting in the way. And what are they doing? They're mowing me down. They're not stopping me. They're not stopping their progress.
Right.
Someone wanted to be a referee. What's your best thing to do?
First of all, I think that what's always ignored with today's training is it should be done the way my dad did it. And it needs to be talked about first. It needs to go over with conversation, explain what the job entails. That's first and foremost, because you have to understand what you're going to do before you get into a ring. And then I believe that you need to be in a ring with a qualified referee that can show you exactly what's going on. I think that that's missing today. I don't know who's training these referees today, but they're obviously not past referees or people that know exactly what refereeing is all about, because it's obviously seen each and every week for me. But I think the main thing is you need to figure out all that first, and then you need to work your ass off on the indie store or indies. I don't know what you want to call it nowadays, but anyway, the indies, and just do as many matches as you can. Build yourself some kind of a library. Finally, when you think you're where you need to be by getting someone like myself to look at your tape and say, I think maybe you could submit this one now, or no, don't submit this one because you got to do this, 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 and this. That's the only way to do it. It's repetition. It's like anything in sports, golf, football. The more you play, the better you'll be. You know what I mean? It's just the same thing with refereeing. I remember going back and watching. Reps. That's it. I remember going back and watching some of my old stuff. I was the drizzling shits, man. I really was. I mean, I moved like an idiot. I moved like a robot. I looked like I was scared. My counts were the shits. I had no cadence. I mean, it was just all mucked up. And I obviously I worked on that. And that was because I had someone like my dad showing me each and every time. This is what you're doing wrong. This is what you're doing wrong. House shows was huge for me. Huge for me. That's how I built. Jack Lanza was the one that initially studied me. He was the one that initially gave me the thumbs up. All right, Brian's ready, Vince, you know, that kind of thing. Another hard critic, but a nice critic. He wasn't like my dad. My dad was just like a fuck you critic. You know what I mean? But he was just one of those really calm guys. Now, don't get me wrong. If I kept doing the same thing over again, he'd really light my ass up. He'd have that cigarette lit and he'd just light into my ass. But and it's okay, man. I mean, you have to be able to take constructive criticism in this business. That's what it's about. That's what this business is built on. And I'm able to do that. Thank God I have tough skin and I'm a Hebner that doesn't give a shit. And that's what I think should happen.
Honestly, real referee in a real industry, baseball, football, hockey, basketball. If you're good at your job, they promote you to what you get playoffs. And then they promote you even more where you get MBAs, which means you make more money, which means you're good at your job. That's a real thing. Two last questions. Most nervous you ever were?
Vince McMahon versus Hulk Hogan when I had 5 blades on me.
Because you were going to cut yourself?
I wanted to.
You're Mount Rushmore of referees. That's 4, buddy.
Like one?
No, 4. You're Mount Rushmore. Oh,
okay. Thank God you gave me 4. Let's see.
Mount Rushmore is Mount Rushmore is, very, very subjective to everyone's Mount Rushmore of greatest tag teams, which is now 8, but like top best wrestlers, top best brawlers. But most people don't talk about Mount Rushmore of referees.
I'm going to go with this. I'm going to go with, in no particular order, Earl Hebner, Mike Chioda, who I felt like was a very, very good referee, Tommy Young. And my last one, I'm going to go with, Timmy White.
Interesting.
How about you?
I can't ever pick this 4 on the Mount Rushmore. I agree on your 3, and then I'd go, and blessed to have worked with all of them, I would say, it's like a tie between you, Corderis, and Timmy.
Okay.
And just because I put you up there and I know we never put ourselves on any lists, but I'll watch your cadence. I watch you've done so much things, but also I know what you have done during matches or how you're communicating or when you say I'm a Hebner, I don't give a fuck. Like you have come back and been like, yo, dude, you can't do this, blah, 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 blah. And you're right in just different, situations or be like, Tommy, I fucked up.
Yes.
Which most people never, ever say. Like, dude, I'm sorry. Or, man, my headset got messed up. I was trying, but, and you're like, cool. But your body of work speaks for itself as well. So definitely your dad, definitely Tommy Young. To me, that's in order 1 and 2.
Yeah.
But I've been blessed to work with a lot of really, and the one thing that you say about why a lot of people put their buddies on shows. And I get it. It's also cheaper talent, which, when you deal with cheaper talent, you're going to get cheaper results. Right. And then it's like, okay, so where do we go from here? And then that proverbial, where do we go from here? If you want to get better at your job, you said it the best. You got to get the reps. That's just like independent wrestlers. That's just like minor league baseball. You have to work your way up to get to the level you are, as well as also you got to be in shape. And it's not like there is a bit of a cosmetic deal to this, but look at the NFL referees, look at the, baseball probably has the older or the least shape wrestler. A referee, but they're out there in that hot ass sun for an entire 9-inning game. They got to get their ass out of the way. And if they don't get their ass out of the way and cause a play to it, they're going to lose their spot.
You know, Tommy, there's one thing I wanted to say real quick, too. I want to go back to Scott D'Amore real quick. I just want to say this about him, and this is 100% true. Could be, if not the best boss I've ever worked for. And I'll tell you why I say that, because he's the most approachable boss that I ever worked for. And why I'm bringing this back up is because we got lost before I could get back to it. But The reason why I'm bringing this up is because the reason why I can say what he said I said to you guys is because I felt comfortable going to him when I knew something wasn't right. I couldn't do that with Vince McMahon. I couldn't do that with half our agents that we had in WWE and WWF. There was an intimidation factor there, and it was always they were better than us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was lucky that, you know, I had that same kind of relationship without, you know, throughout my whole TNA career. But Scott was the better of them, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And he invited me for that information. Like, he invited me. He would come by me during the day and would go, everything okay? All your matches seem okay? You have any, you know, questions or anything like that? That doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. Dixie Carter never walked around and asked me if everything was okay with my matches. Vince McMahon never asked me that. I have to admit Billy Corgan did. But, you know, that's very important. And I think that's what makes you guys right now. And I'm not just trying to toot your own horn. I told you this the other day when I called you, and I really mean it. Y'all have the best product right now. You do. Hands down. It's easy to follow. There's great storylines. The refereeing's quality. And it's because I think that Scott's the way he is, and people are just letting their hair down and just working and working for each other and building a good team chemistry. And I feel that, and I see that. So I just wanted to touch on that. And I wanted to put Scott over because he needs to be put over. I mean, he really does. He needs to be put over. He's doing a hell of a job out there.
I agree on a lot of levels. Don't tell Bully that. Bully just tried to kill him and put him on fire.
Yeah, I saw that. It was great.
Listen, you'll pop for this. Bully lifts him up. He puts him through the table. I'm of course in the back, and Scott had asked me, hey man, if anything goes wrong, like what's going to happen? Like I go, dude, literally what they teach you in school, stop, drop and roll. I said, and if that table is hot, jump off of it, 'cause it could stick to you. Right. I go pop up and get off. When there's a point, if you go back and watch it, he goes up, he gets lit. And dude, honestly, like with that flame, the higher you are, you're feeling that heat right away because heat rises. And yeah. Once you go through it, it's this instant surge of heat surrounding you. And, you know, you're looking like, you know, when you're in a fire, like, how do I escape? And his legs go up and I see his pant legs drop. And, you know, yeah. Between Bully and Scott, they got two good sets of calves. Right. And like, I'd be like, every once in a while, Bully would show like to be Bully. He'd like point at Scott and be like, check these out. Right. And then, so Scott goes up, Scott goes down. And as he's popping to try to get away from the fire, I see the flames on both his calves that are exposed. And I go, no, not his calves. It's the only good part of his body left.
Did he singe the bottom of his legs right there where his pants stop?
Of course.
No. Okay. I saw that. I was like, oh my God, he got lit.
But me in the back, I was like, that's all I cared about. I didn't care if Scott legit was on fire, but I was like, not his calves. It's this last thing he's got.
That's crazy. That is crazy. That was a good spot.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, man, in closing, just like I said in your podcast, I love you. You've been my friend. You'll be my friend till the end. I'm happy I get to connect with you. I'm happy that we still bullshit and talk, but it's always a pleasure that I got to work with you, and I know I'll work with you again. I'll get your old ass out of retirement again. Yeah. I just wanted to thank you for coming on the show. How do we find you, and how do we find your podcast?
All right. Well, first of all, Tommy, I love you, buddy. And I really do. And believe it or not, and I think you know, because I told you, but you were like one of the first people I called about my decision to retire. And there's a reason why. You always answer my calls no matter what time it is. And I always know you'll be awake anyway. So
that's why my eyes look like this.
But anyway, I'm only on two social platforms. It's Twitter and Instagram, and it's @BabyHebner. And of course, I have a podcast. It's called Reffing It Up with Baby Hebner. It airs and drops each and every Wednesday at 9 o'clock on all your podcast platforms. Sorry about that. Hey, Tommy, I don't know if you see that.
Whoa, check out that arm heat.
Still,
maybe
still
now I could be it. That wrestler, enter the X division under a mask.
Yes, but I'm still in ring shape. I actually just got back from the gym before I hopped on here. So yeah, and life is good. And retiring was a good call for me. My daughters are just loving the fact that I'm here up their butts at everything, probably more than they want me to be. And it's okay. I love it.
Well, I'm happy for you, buddy. And I love you. And thank you for being a guest. And that is this week's episode of the House of Hardcore Podcast with the one and only best damn ref in biz, Brian Hepp.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.